The Radio Iowa Podcast. I'm Stella Schaffer. Iowa doesn't have a major pro baseball, basketball, or football franchise, but now we have a Masters Tournament golf champ. 31-year-old Zach Johnson's being toasted by residents of Iowa City, where he was born, Cedar Rapids, where he grew up, and Drake University, where he graduated, but says he was never number one on the golf team. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack said early this week it's time to think about another way of financing presidential campaigns. Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson filed this report Monday morning.
Vilsack was the keynote speaker during a weekend forum at Drake University's law school. Vilsack told the crowd that under the current system, presidential candidates must depend on about 1,500 to 2,000 people who have the capacity to bundle campaign donations. Those are the people who know people and who are key to a candidate raising the kind of cash necessary for a run for the White House. Vilsack himself dropped out of the presidential race in February, citing an inability to raise enough money. Vilsack told the weekend crowd at Drake that if voters want competitive elections, then it is time to consider taxpayer-financed campaigns. Radio Iowa, I'm O.K. Henderson.
Lest we be accused of putting drama into the headlines, we don't have to. Republicans in the Iowa Senate blocked Governor Culver's nominee to head the Iowa Department of Public Safety on Tuesday night with no debate. Gene Meyer retired last year from the Division of Criminal Investigation after 38 years in the DPS. With the discovery that he'd become the governor's first nominee to be blocked, Senate Democrat leader Mike Gronstahl of Council Bluffs was livid.
We had a completely qualified person ready to take a position. Did one Republican ask him a question? Completely gutless.
Republicans met in closed session. They came out opposing Meyer's nomination. The vote to confirm fell short. They weren't talking, but Gronstahl was fuming.
You don't have the guts to even stand up and be counted. You go into caucus and in secret, take somebody down. That's right, smirk, some of you. Smirk. Because you have no guts, you ought to be ashamed. I hope you sleep well tonight.
Senate Republican leader Mary Lunby of Marion said the new public safety chief should come from outside the department.
Being an insider in a department brings with it some problems. Biases against certain individuals, biases possibly against divisions within that department, maybe biases against directors of divisions within that department.
Capital Insider said it looked like part of a larger political situation that will play out before the end of the session. The next morning, Democrat Governor Chet Culver asked State House Republicans to take a deep breath and think again about turning down his public safety nominee.
What I'm asking the Republican senators to do is not put partisan politics over public safety.
Representative Clell Bodler of Greenfield is a retired state trooper. He says Meyer's the most qualified for the job.
When the news hit yesterday that Gene was not going to be confirmed, my phone lit up. And constantly, trooper after trooper after trooper described him as a breath of fresh air. You can go into his office and get an answer for a change.
He's a Republican, and so is Marshall County Sheriff Ted Comaches.
As my presidency of the National Sheriff's Association, and as a past president of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association, partisan politics has no place in public safety. It has no place whatsoever.
Meyer himself, a registered independent, admits he was surprised Republican senators opposed his appointment since none of them raised concerns when he met with them face to face.
I was very humbled and honored when called by the governor and asked if I would be willing to return to state government and accept the position as state public safety commissioner. I did so because public safety is my life. And I've always been honored by the fact that maybe I could just make a little bit of difference in the lives of Iowans. Because I truly believe if Iowans aren't safe in their homes and on their streets, that they're not going to go out and do the business that they need to do to drive the economic engine of this state.
Republican senators were meeting behind closed doors. Stay tuned. The Senate by Friday did see its way clear to confirm all four of the people the governor appointed to the Board of Regents. Republicans in the Senate had complained all the nominees to the board were from central or eastern Iowa. Senate GOP leader Mary Lunby of Marion says the governor offered an olive branch.
We have in our possession, each member of the Senate Republican Caucus, a letter from the governor confirming that the next appointment to the Board of Regents will be from Western Iowa.
Senate Democratic Leader Mike Gronstahl of Council Bluffs is from Western Iowa.
I think it's an appropriate resolution to the concerns about the Board of Regents.
But you lose some. Republicans also refused to confirm former Iowa Ag Secretary Dale Cochran, a Democrat, to a seat on the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission. Senate Republican Leader Mary Lundby of Marion spoke up again, saying Cochran can't serve in the position he was nominated for.
Mr. Cochran has problems because the code specifically says you shall be actively engaged in grain or livestock farming. He sold his farm last summer. He lives half the year in Florida and half the year in Iowa. He lists his home address in Urbandale, and that does not meet the criteria.
Here's some more inside stuff. The governor's picks to serve on state boards and commissions have to get a yes vote from 34 of Iowa's 50 state senators. Well, there are 30 Democrats in the state Senate, 20 Republicans. Later in the week, the governor vetoed his first bill, one that passed the Iowa House and Senate this year without a dissenting vote. The legislation would have limited the appeals process for someone convicted of a simple misdemeanor. That can range from a speeding ticket to domestic abuse. Culver said the wish to clear away frivolous appeals didn't trump the right to keep fighting for a fair shot in the courts. Here's one we owe the Des Moines Register, which dug out details recently of a professor who was fired for altering student reviews of his performance. Nobody knew till that story broke that the U of I paid Kenneth Kress more than $200,000 in cash after he resigned, or that the university also continued providing Kress health care benefits, on-campus office space, and a research assistant. Iowa Board of Regents President Michael Gartner says one of the lessons here is that such things shouldn't be swept under the rug.
It's quite ironic that this is the university that has attacked the regents for not being open, whereas the regents are the most open agency there is in the state of Iowa. This is taxpayers' dollars we're talking about here.
This is a very tender point, since the regent's secrecy was a major public objection after the first search for a University of Iowa president fell through and earned disgust for the regents, and particularly Gartner.
You cannot pretend that it doesn't exist. You must face up to it and disclose. Early and full disclosure is very, very important.
Iowa Board of Regents Executive Director Gary Steinke says the board didn't know anything about the settlement with this professor until they read about it in the newspaper.
When I read it in the newspaper, and I know that when several other regents read it in the newspaper on Sunday, we were all very surprised.
Board President Gartner sent a note to all the regents asking that a policy be developed so the board is informed of ethical lapses on campus.
We are the mechanism by which someone can appeal a decision that the administration makes, but that doesn't mean we should be in the dark until that.
Latest report from the Iowa Attorney General's office shows 20 people were killed in crimes of domestic violence in Iowa in the past year, the most since a victim's advocate in the AG's office began tracking the deaths in 1995. Radio Iowa's Dar Danielson checked in from the latest total.
The report by the Attorney General's Crime Victim Assistance Division says 14 women, 3 men, and 3 children bystanders were killed in incidents of domestic violence in 2006. That continues a 3-year string of double-digit deaths that saw 10 killed in 2004, 11 in 2005, and 15 in 2006. The report says a total of 161 Iowans have been killed in domestic violence murders since January of 1995 when the report began. The report says of those killed overall, 108 were women, and 144 of those who died were killed by men. The report says 168 daughters and sons survived the women and men who have been killed by domestic violence, and 115 of the surviving children are minors. Radio Iowa, I'm Dar Danielson.
A big announcement this week that Houston-based ConocoPhillips will give $22 million to Iowa State University over the next 8 years for research into biofuels. Formed by the merger of Phillips Petroleum and Conoco in 2003, the Houston-based corporation announced this week ISU has the mix of farm and engineering know-how to spearhead research into alternative fuels that's willing to pay for. One of the speakers at the announcement of names was Ruth Harkin. She's the wife of the U.S. Senator, sits on the Iowa Board of Regents, and serves on the ConocoPhillips Board of Directors.
I believe that public-private partnerships are essential to the growth of Iowa's economy.
ConocoPhillips executive Ryan Lance said the company chose Iowa State because its faculty has great expertise in biofuels.
We've looked around the world at universities and decided to partner here and create our anchor program with Iowa State. So we've looked in Europe, we've looked in all the various universities around the world, and we think Iowa State's ahead of the game.
ISU President Gregory Joffre said contributing to the development of the bioeconomy is in line with the university's mission.
The potential is huge. Biofuels is an enormous area. We would hope there would be breakthroughs. Breakthroughs afford enormous economic opportunity.
The bishop of the Des Moines Catholic Diocese announced his retirement Tuesday. 67-year-old Bishop Joseph Sharon says he decided to take early retirement because of a medical condition that makes it tough for him to do his job.
My decision did not come lightly nor quickly. I have not been feeling well for some time and was diagnosed with a chronic condition that I am learning to live with.
67-year-old Bishop says an arthritic condition at times gives him intense pain, doing things like kneeling. Wednesday evening, Democratic presidential candidate Christopher Dodd spoke in Des Moines, critical of the way President Bush has conducted foreign policy. He challenged his competitors to back a plan to cut off funding for troops in Iraq March 31st of next year.
What is clear is that the 6 years of the Bush administration have made America, in my view, and the world far less secure, not more secure, our place in the world less certain than ever before.
Dodd laid blame not only on President Bush, but on fellow Senator John McCain, a Republican candidate for president who's backing the president's latest plan for Iraq.
We don't need a surge of troops in Iraq. We need a surge of diplomacy and politics. Every knowledgeable person who has examined the Iraqi situation for the past several years has drawn the very same conclusion.
Dodd also contrasted himself with Barack Obama, one of his competitors in the race for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. Obama is in his first term as a U.S. senator. Dodd has been a senator for 26 years.
Hope alone will not bring back our allies, and hope alone will not restore America's leadership. Like never before, we're going to need national leaders. A president who is ready to lead from day one.
And Dodd said prolonging the war will not make us more secure, but ending it will. After he dropped out of the presidential race in February, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack signed on to be a visiting professor at Drake's Law School and a consultant for MidAmerican Energy. Now he's signed up to work about 3 days a week on legal cases. Vilsack will be working out of the Des Moines office of the Dorsey & Whitney Law Firm. It's based in Minneapolis with 19 branch offices around the world. He took the job after chatting about it with former Vice President Walter Mondale, who works for the firm on international cases. Ohio Congressman and Democratic presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich says most of the rest of the Democratic Party is just as wrong as the Bush administration when it comes to the war in Iraq. Kucinich describes himself as the only candidate who is clean on issues of war and peace.
Congressional Democrats have voted to fund the war, $97 billion, have voted a budget for $195 billion to keep the war going into 2009.
During his swing through the state late this week, Kucinich was harshly critical of rival John Edwards, who won the support of some former Kucinich backers after saying he'd made a mistake in backing the Iraq war at first. Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards, worries that her openness about her cancer diagnosis is drawing unwanted attention.
The less this has to do with me and the more it has to do with the general conversation we can have about healthcare, cancer research, or actually even mortality, I'm completely happy going in those directions. The more it's, how's Elizabeth doing? What's Elizabeth doing? I don't think it's really useful. I mean, we are already too obsessed with sort of the cult of personalities.
Mrs. Edwards says she and her husband have joked that because of her cancer fight, some are trying to bestow on her the title of Saint Elizabeth. She says it's not one she covets.
I worry about it, that it's changing the conversation from things we ought to be talking about. And I worry that it, and this is too strong a word, deifies me when it shouldn't.
Mrs. Edwards contends it's her husband's candor and his decision to admit he made a mistake in voting to authorize the war that are earning him support among Democrat activists.
Have you lost complete touch with reality today?
Louis Black blasts everything from politics and religion to celebrities and homeland security. The 58-year-old says he's surrounded by things that bug him.
You know, I wake up, I read the paper, I just, you know, there's just a series of irritants that they're just out there. I mean, it's just, you look at what this country can be and you look at what it is, and you got to be an idiot not to think that there's something to be upset about.
Black has plenty to be happy about, too. The regular on Comedy Central's Daily Show won the Grammy in February for Best Comedy Album. Plus, he's touring nationwide while working on his second book and a TV pilot starring himself. Radio Iowa, I'm Matt Kelly.
We learned this week there's more going around than spring sniffles to worry about. Steve Smith sent a report from Fairfield.
An active case of tuberculosis has been confirmed in Jefferson County. The case was reported last month, and since that time, the infected person has been in isolation and receiving medication. Jefferson County Public Health Nurse Vicki McKeever says since the infected person has been isolated from the community, there's no threat to others. However, her department continues to investigate and watch those who have been in contact with that person. But no other active cases have been found. For Radio Iowa News, I'm Steve Smith.
Former Iowa Congressman Jim Leach has a new gig.
Welcome. Today we're talking to Bill Bradley on Afterwards.
Leach has been invited on C-SPAN as a guest interview on the network's Afterwards program, which features authors. The channel broadcast a conversation Leach had with Bill Bradley, a fellow Princeton grad, about Bradley's new book. Bradley, a former NBA star who went on to be a New Jersey senator, ran for president in 2000.
Your book, The New American Story, is probably the finest book I've ever read by a practitioner of politics.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And it's also written, and not accidentally, I think, by one of the finest senators ever to serve in the United States Senate.
The interview was nearly an hour long, and we've got the audio archived at radioiowa.com. Leach is writing a book himself and is also teaching at Princeton. That's no longer a Big Ten 4, good buddy. The Radio 10 code, used as verbal shorthand by law enforcement agencies for decades, will be phased out. Captain Todd Mizell of the Iowa State Patrol says many found out they were using different sets of 10 calls to mean different things in different jurisdictions.
We had upwards of 130 different 10 codes that we used, and effective April 2nd, the implementation of our new policy will be down to as few as 30 different 10 codes. Some of the 10 codes we've traditionally used for driver's license check and license plate checks, we're going to keep those. But anything that really deals with an emergency, an accident, a fire, something like that, the plain language is expected to be used.
And apparently digital telecommunications have helped put the old radio codes 10-7 out of service. A Western Iowa man who ran away from the Mills County Courthouse Sunday was back in custody a day later. Lieutenant Mike Osler says 30-year-old Troy Eugene Clayton had been brought to the sheriff's office for an initial appearance before a magistrate judge. Yes, on a Sunday. At the end of the appearance, a jailer was taking Clayton back to his cell when he overpowered the guard and ran out. The lieutenant says the suspect had a lot to think over besides his newfound freedom.
He was due to be sentenced on other charges. He was due to appear in court already, and he was out on bond on those charges, and I think he and his family had a lot at stake if he didn't make that appearance financially wise.
Clayton's father called a little before 9 Monday morning to say he'd turn himself in, and about a quarter past, the man showed up at the courthouse where officers were waiting to take him back into custody. Despite his cooperation, Clayton faces more charges in connection with the brief escape.
He had a long list already, but he did plead guilty this morning to the escape charge and also the assault on the jailer.
Earlier charges against Clayton included manufacturing methamphetamine and disorderly conduct. Gas prices took another dime-a-gallon jump in Iowa just before the Easter weekend. AAA's Rose White says pump prices have been steadily climbing for 9 weeks.
We have seen crude oil prices drop and processed fuel prices rise.
The average price for a gallon of gas in Iowa, $2.71. But then that was clear back on Monday. Low-income Iowans affected by the late February and early March snowstorms can apply for state grants to replace their losses from the storms under legislation signed by the governor. Dean Cushman's with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, at a local office in Urbandale, Iowa. He says the grants are earmarked for specific recovery costs.
They lost some food. They need some help in getting their electric wire hooked back up to their house again. They had some damage to the vehicle because of the snow. Maybe they slid off the side of the road or something.
Cushman says there's a total of $1 million available to individual Iowans whose annual income is lower than 130% of federal poverty guidelines. For a family of four, that's $26,845. A Pottawatomie County jury Tuesday afternoon pronounced former Dallas County Sheriff Brian Gilbert guilty of felony theft. His own deputies stopped a car on Interstate 80 back in March of 2006 and seized nearly $1 million in cash. The currency, wrapped in plastic bags, was put into Gilbert's car to be transported back to the sheriff's office. Sheriff Gilbert says he stopped by his own home to close a garage door, but officers testified that when he got back to the station, one bag of cash was missing. After an investigation that concluded he took about $120,000, Gilbert resigned last October. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has established the nation's first renewable fuel standard that creates a minimum percentage of fuel sold that must be a mix with ethanol or biodiesel. Monty Shaw is a spokesman for the industry in Iowa. He hailed the standard, saying it'll help farmers make planting decisions and could encourage investors in renewable fuels. He sees Iowa still leading the pack.
More states will get involved. There'll be existing ethanol producers expand. There will be new states that get into the ethanol and biodiesel arena, but we do expect Iowa to maintain its lead as long as the state continues to provide a business climate that attracts these investments.
Shaw says he doesn't think the legislation will drag the country forward, but rather it'll be a floor that will exceed for the use of renewables. After a lot of debate, the Iowa House voted against a move to shut down red light cameras. Several cities have installed the automated systems to shoot photos of license plates when a car runs a red light. Their digital evidence results in a ticket sent to the car owner, but the cameras have been challenged in court with mixed success. The Iowa Senate early this week voted to ban them. Representative Lance Horbach, a Republican from Tama, spoke against the cameras.
You're fighting for public safety, safety for the public. And my position is I'm fighting for rights and privacy and less government intervention. How far are we willing to go?
But advocates like Representative Jerry Huser, a Democrat from Altoona, argued that red light cameras are a good tool for law enforcement.
A $50 red light ticket is a gentle yet meaningful reminder to a young driver to pay better attention to the traffic laws. And who knows, it may save the life of one of your loved ones.
The transportation bill, without the camera ban, now goes back to the Senate. A Florida man was sentenced this week to 2 years in prison for scalping tickets. This was no impulse deal by a fan who found he had other plans. This stems from an Iowa-Ohio game last year when 400 people were turned away and found the tickets they'd bought were all fakes. The Council Bluffs School District's doing something it never did before, put a woman in charge. Martha Bruckner was named the new superintendent and is well aware of her distinction.
I've been the first woman to do several things in my profession, but I had some interesting advice from one of my colleagues today. She said, if you're the first woman doing something, you have to be sure you do it well because you're representing a lot of women. That's a heavy load to carry, so I'll try to do my best.
Bruckner says her first goal is to raise the percentage of Council Bluffs students who graduate in 4 years. The widow of a Western Iowa man who was shot to death by a Shelby County Sheriff's deputy has been arrested for murder. Rick Hansen reports.
According to police in Council Bluffs, 47-year-old Bluffs resident Wanda B. Jens was arrested Wednesday night on a capital murder warrant out of Cameron County, Texas. Jens told police she had nothing to do with the incident in Texas. Her ex-husband, Dwayne Jens, was shot and killed by Shelby County Sheriff's Deputy Brad Butler following a pursuit in December of 2004. When the chase ended, Butler shot Jens through the driver's side window of his pickup. The deputy claimed Jens made a threatening motion while holding an object. Jens' daughter, who was in the pickup when the shooting occurred, said her father was holding a cell phone. A grand jury indicted Butler on manslaughter charges, but he was later found not guilty. In Atlantic, I'm Rick Hansen for Radio Iowa News.
As soon as the story broke, reporters started calling up the sheriff in Brownsville, Texas, and he didn't return any reporters' calls about why they issued a capital murder warrant for Wanda Jens. By the end of the week, the county attorney in Cameron County, Texas, wasn't answering phone calls either. One of Iowa's favorite hunting seasons, or actually several, will be this month, with no pun intended on politics. It's turkey season.
It lasts, there's four different seasons, and it lasts for over a month.
Department of Natural Resources Conservation Officer Andrea Bevington says wild turkeys are some of the most popular game for hunters in Iowa. Bevington's been working on the case of three bald eagles found dead recently within a few miles of Bedford in southwest Iowa's Taylor County. She hasn't had much luck so far, but there's a reward. This may be a related story. You can't shoot a buzzard. But turkey vultures have migrated back to Iowa for the spring. And it ain't the swallows from Capistrano. Atlantic Mayor John Krogman is at his wit's end.
The buzzards that sit on the courthouse tower. They don't only sit on the tower, of course, they sit pretty much everywhere, and including two houses down from me. When it's not cold like now, there's usually about 25 to 30 of them in that tree every single night, all night long. And they cover houses, they cover cars, and they cover the street.
We've had cities around Iowa have a similar problem with crows for years. The mayor and city administrator, Ron Crisp, contacted the Department of Natural Resources asking for a solution. Crisp says a DNR wildlife biologist offered him one idea.
There should be spikes that are put around on the tower. Those spikes then would make it uncomfortable for the vultures, and then they would go somewhere else, and that would also eliminate the problem with the trees.
Then someone at the meeting suggested the Atlantic Fire Department shoot water from their hoses into the trees. It would probably only force the birds to move to another neighborhood, but City Councilman Steve Livengood said it was better than doing nothing at all.
Well, if we move them, then we hose them all the way to Red Oak, or whatever we need to do.
Go the other way. Yeah. Let's send them to Harlan. Send them to Harlan.
Killing the birds is not an option. They're a federally protected species. But they might take a page from old westerns. It seems they could get a permit to kill just two of the birds and hang their carcasses in the trees as a deterrent to others roosting there. Anybody outdoors had to bundle up as the weather 3 weeks after the calendar said spring was in the deep freeze, and then came winter storms. Meteorologist Tiffany Norris on Tuesday saw snow and blowing snow advisories ahead.
We'll see the heavier snowfall as we get into the overnight, 3 to 5 inches for the overnight hours.
Snowstorms in early April aren't ever out of the question in Iowa. 4 years ago, this week, north central Iowa saw a foot of snowfall, followed a week later by near 90-degree temperatures. As this storm got worse, it rained all over, snowed up north, and the roads got treacherous. A semi-driver in Pottawatomie County had to be cut from the crumpled wreckage of his cab in critical condition after the load shifted and the rig rolled. I-35 near Osceola was closed for 2 hours after a Vinton man lost control of his pickup. It crossed the median into the north. Northbound lanes rolled and was then hit by a semi about 4 a.m. Wednesday. The Department of Public Safety's Jessica Roberts says about 3 hours later they got a call to a bad one just off the 104-mile marker of Interstate 80.
There was an accident on a small county road called P-57 just south of I-80 north of Earlham. And when officers arrived from the Iowa State Patrol, there were two. It was obvious that there was it was too many vans that were involved in that crash.
The driver of one minivan and two of her young sons died there. A third son sent to a Des Moines hospital, along with the woman and boy in the other van. Farther northwest, where there was more snow, a car went into a skid on a slushy bridge in Sac County. And Joel Herman reports three teens from Schaller died on their way to school.
The Sac County Sheriff's Department says the three teens were going to school early to lift weights when their car crashed into an oncoming semi on Highway 20 west of Early. 17-year-old Cody Clausen was driving the car eastbound. It spun out of control on the slush-covered bridge over the Boyer River. The car slid sideways, crossing the center line, and was hit by a westbound semi. Clausen and his 15-year-old half-brother, Samuel Collier, were pronounced dead at the scene. Another passenger, 16-year-old Anthony Derek Clark, was trapped in the back seat of the vehicle. Clark was extricated by the Sac City and Early fire departments. He was taken by ambulance to the hospital in Sac City, where he died of his injuries. All three boys were students at the Shaler Crestland High School. Joel Herman, Radio Iowa, Stormlike.
Thursday, the phones were ringing on one of those spot news events that make up our patchwork of stories from across the state. Usually the train derailments happen out in the open country or at small sidings, not in the heart of downtown Des Moines.
The engine portion of it derailed, came off the tracks in the approximately 1500 block ML King. Didn't allow any type of through traffic, so pretty congested, but our traffic unit is working to try to reroute those individuals.
Des Moines Police Sergeant Todd Dykstra says nobody got hurt in the derailment, which closed a new street that links Des Moines' MLK Thruway to the downtown area. Lawmakers gave final approval to legislation governing sex education in Iowa schools. There's some false information posted on national discussion boards about it, but Senator Joe Bolcom, a Democrat from Iowa City, explained schools and parents can still control what's taught in sex ed classes.
Local school boards and parents will decide, as they always have, what the materials will be, what materials will be used. The difference now is that those materials are going to have to be research-based and medically accurate.
Despite outsiders' claims that the curriculum would come from Planned Parenthood or anywhere else, schools will, under the bill, have the freedom to choose what will be taught. They just can't include factoids in the lessons that aren't actually based on medical truth. A native Iowan told lawmakers they should back a bill to prevent insurance companies from capping what they'll pay for an artificial limb. While it would benefit wounded soldiers, Nick Ackerman comes at the subject from a different direction. When he was 18 months old, doctors amputated both legs below the knee to stop the spread of bacterial meningitis.
If you lose a leg from diabetes, from cancer, from something traumatic, you expect to have coverage for your prosthetic.
Ackerman's now 27 years old, living in Davenport, working in the prosthetics industry. But before that, he made his mark as a national champion wrestler from Simpson College. A study by Iowa-based American College Testing, the ACT company, concludes there's a gap between what high schools are teaching in college prep courses and what colleges want their new students to know. Cynthia Schmeiser, president of ACT's education division, says the survey indicates high school teachers try to cover too much ground and students don't master the key academic skills they'll need in college.
We need to align the high school curriculum with post-secondary expectations.
About two-thirds of the college instructors surveyed say students are poorly or very poorly prepared for college-level classes. But meanwhile, most of the junior high and high school teachers surveyed believe their students are well or very well prepared for college.
I think the gap has been there. We haven't seen it really getting any bigger, nor have we seen it getting any smaller. And I think that's why now this data can really inform the conversations that are going on in so many states about how to close that gap.
A lot of the college instructors said they were frustrated that some students can't write a complete sentence. The American College Testing Program was founded in Iowa City back in 1959. Today, millions of students take the ACT, and it helps determine whether they'll be admitted to college. The Iowa chapter of the Make-A-Wish Foundation turns 20 this year. Executive Director Brett Ridge says the group grants the wishes of kids who have life-threatening medical conditions.
They have to be between the ages of 2.5 and 18 years of age, and that's important to note that it's life-threatening medical conditions, not necessarily terminal. So we are talking about a situation where the child's life is threatened, but they may possibly survive, and fortunately for us, we have a good number of them that do survive.
The average cost of granting a wish, about $7,500, and a fundraiser gala is planned for April 21st in West Des Moines. To learn more, visit the Iowa Chapter's website at iowawish.org. We put clickable links like that in the stories that we post to RadioIowa.com. You've heard of the Harlem Globetrotters. Who hasn't? But the team's been around a long time. They hit the boards in Iowa this weekend, as Radio Iowa's Matt Kelly reports.
32-year-old Kentucky native Otis Key is starting his 10th season with the Touring Ambassadors of Basketball. They've been touring every year since 1926.
Yeah, 81 years. You know, this is a long time, and it's quite a treat when you have a sports team, especially an independent basketball team that's been around that long. You know, everywhere you go, you love, you win every night. Can't be better.
Key admits they don't win every night. Over the 8-plus decades, the Globetrotters' record is over 22,000 wins and some 345 losses. They've played in 118 countries on 6 continents before 125 million fans. They'll add a few thousand more with Sunday's game at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. Radio Iowa, I'm Matt Kelly.
The Spirit Lake Company, founded by former Iowa Congressman Berkeley Bedell, has been sold to a New York firm. Mark Brugham reports.
Officials at Jarden Corporation say they've acquired Pure Fishing. They've scheduled a news conference for this afternoon. Jarden Corporation is based in Rye, New York. They're describing themselves as a niche company that markets many brands. Pure Fishing will join the Coleman Company, which is also owned by Jarden. Details of the transaction haven't been made fully public, but Jarden says they'll pay $300 million in cash and another $100 million on a 5-year note with some stock options as well. Reporting from Spencer for Radio Iowa, I'm Mark Brugham.
Bedell represented Iowa in Congress for 6 terms, from 1975 to 1987. Republican presidential hopeful Mike Huckabee says the character of the GOP candidates should be an issue in 2008. And if it isn't, the former Arkansas governor, who's also a Baptist minister, says Christian conservatives in his party owe a big apology to Bill Clinton.
I'm specifically referencing Christian evangelical leaders who were the most vocal in saying back during the Clinton era that personal behavior, personal responsibility, character were the key factors in a president's criteria.
He's going somewhere with this. In public opinion polls, Huckabee lags behind candidates like Rudy Giuliani, who's been married three times, went through a very public and bitter divorce with his second wife, and is estranged from his son. Huckabee says he's openly asking evangelical Christian leaders if all that is fair game.
And if it is, okay. If it isn't, then why is it an issue for Bill Clinton and it's not for somebody else? My point is consistency, because I do believe that it's an issue of credibility.
Huckabee also has, in the past, been a guest on the Don Imus show. It was canceled this week by CBS after MSNBC ended the simulcast on its cable network the day before.
That was a decision the networks had to make. I think if Imus is going to get fired, then there's a lot of other people that need to go out the door. Rosie probably has got to go. Bill Maher has to go. Gosh, half of talk radio and television has to go.
After taping a program for Iowa Public Television, Huckabee made his last comments in an interview with Radio Iowa. He was the first of 10 Republican presidential candidates to make it to the state for a Saturday night event in Des Moines, where all 10 are scheduled to speak. You can hear his comments about Imus at RadioIowa.com. And don't forget, farther on down the page where you found this podcast, O.K. Henderson, our news director, State House, and political correspondent, writes the blog. This is the podcast, and I'm Stella Schaffer.